Right. I think we are live. So, hello, everybody. Hello, hello. All right, we'll wait a couple of minutes for people to hop on, and then I'm just going to say hi if you hop on and let us know if you can see us and hear us okay. Great, people are hopping on. All right. Can you guys hear us and see us okay? We'll get started in just a few minutes. Hello. Welcome. All right, let me just check from my phone if it looks like we're okay. Here we go. Okay, great. Somebody gave us a thumbs up. Yay.
Good start.
Okay, good. All right, awesome. All right, so people will continue to hop on, but I'm going to go ahead and get started, everybody. Thank you so much for joining, first of all. And I'd like to welcome our guest today, Luis Mojica of Holistic Life Navigation. I'm really excited about this today because this has been something I've wanted to do for a while, is talk about the somatic aspect to parenting. Because it's so important. And so I'm really excited to talk about this today. So Luis is the founder of Holistic Life Navigation. It's a unique type of therapy and practice that integrates coaching, whole foods nutrition, which I'm a big supporter of, and somatic therapy to release stress and trauma. And he found his way into this after years of suffering from traumatic childhood events that led to PTSD and illness, and I can certainly relate to that. And he healed himself and taught others how to do this. So I'm excited to learn about this. I wish I had known that 30 years ago. I have a 30-year-old daughter. When I was raising my daughter, I had no idea. And so, everyone, please welcome Luis today, and really appreciate you being here and being willing to do this for us. I know everybody's really looking forward to this. So we are streaming on Facebook right now in my group, which is Navigating No Contact with Toxic Parents, and then on my page and my business profile. So we're in three places. And people will kind of continue to hop on, but I think we can, in the interest of time, we're going to get started. We're going to go probably an hour, maybe an hour and a half, depending how many questions we have. So we will do questions towards the end. I'd like to suggest that if you guys could wait till closer with to the end and write your questions in the chat box, just because they'll start to get buried in there as people are saying hi or hopping on. And we will take some time for the Q&A at the end if that sounds good to everybody. All right. And we're just going to kind of turn it over and chat and go from there.
Cool. So,
Cool.
hi everybody. If you're new to me, welcome. Nice to meet you. I love talking about somatic parenting, especially with a group like this, because when we're talking about toxic parenting or toxic relationships, the way we're experiencing that in our body is threat response and trigger. So, I like to start with that, and I like to start with everyone just taking a little somatic meditation. So we just get comfortable first and just notice your seat, your chair, wherever you're sitting, and just see if your body can ease into that. And just feel that and notice what your breath does. Okay. And then notice your neck, your jaw, your head. How is your head seated on your shoulders? What does that feel like? And what we're looking for as we do this is we're just looking for, where are you clenched? Where are you expanded? Where are you relaxed? Where are you numb? And just notice that the best part about this meditation is you don't have to do anything about it. We're just learning and noticing. So travel down to your shoulders nice and slow. And then go from your shoulders down your chest, the top of your back. Just make your way down to your hips. Take it nice and slow as you want to go. Just with your breath, track with your breath. And again, we're looking for constriction. We're looking for neutrality. We're looking for expansion, if you feel like you can breathe very easily into a space. And we're looking for numbness. Where do I not feel my body? What parts do I feel shut off from? And just check it in. Just check in with that part of you. And just keep going down your hips, your legs, your knees, your shins, your feet. Take your time going down the lower half of your body. And any intuitive movement you want to make, just let yourself make. If you want to stretch, if you want to shake, if you want to drink, if you want to stand up, whatever your body wants to do. If you want a pillow, some of you might feel really good putting a pillow over your abdomen or over your lap and feeling how that feels. It might feel more supportive or safer. So just take your time easing into your body. And then as you do that, look around your room. Take in your environment. Look out the window. Look around the room. Turn your neck all the way around and look behind you and feel the twist in your back. And just notice, do I like that? Is that comfortable? Is that uncomfortable? What does that do when you twist? And then bring your awareness to the screen and check us out. Look at Tracy, look at myself, let yourself orient to us, which just means take us in and see what your body does. You know, does it feel easy to look? Does it feel strained? Do you want to slide your chair back a little bit? Find your own boundary, even with us, even though you're not interacting with us right now, find your boundary with us and see what that feels like. Mm. And take your time with that. Okay. And then, you know, as you bring yourself here and you're orienting, I'm going to start by introducing... I'll ask Tracy first, should I introduce somatic work? Is your group really familiar with that, or should I say anything about that?
A lot of people are familiar with that because I talk about the nervous system and the somatic stuff quite a bit. So they're even if they're new to it, they're getting it, which I love. So awesome. Yeah.
I love that. So you're prepped. You've all done your work. So this is so the when I was thinking about bringing this, I'll call it a lecture, to this group, I was trying to figure out, well, what, you know, what's the angle? What's really important for me to express to all of you? Mm-hmm. And when I think about, like I said, the idea of a relationship to a toxic parent, what we're talking about is a parent that creates dysregulation in the body. Mm-hmm. So there's like an activation, there's a charge, right? A discomfort.
Yeah.
Now, this is what's so important about that. So to start with your parent, a parent got that way because whatever trauma they went through in childhood, it didn't allow them to develop the capacity to hold on to discomfort very easily. Yeah. Which means as we're developing as children of these parents, traumatized parents with unprocessed trauma is really the key word here. So parents with unprocessed trauma, we didn't feel seen. We weren't held in safe space. There weren't wasn't room for our emotions because they didn't have room for their emotions, right? So it's so important to understand that, because one, you can actually find this nice compassion for them, and you can understand that they can't meet your needs. So the space and the distance and navigating no contact, all that is so important, because you can't no longer expect them to meet that need. So now we're here as adults and we're thinking, well, how do I heal from this? as a parent, right? Because as a parent, we're navigating all of our parenting from the nervous system that experienced our parents. And if you have a strained relationship with your parents or trauma, especially relational trauma that had a rupture. So if you were abused emotionally or physically or sexually in any way by a parent, that's in your body around your relational attachment. So what that means is you're going to have a charge around your own children. And this goes beyond the mind, right? This is in the body. So we all can take a moment to just notice, like, what am I here for as a parent? And you could be an 80-year-old, parent. You could be a 25-year-old parent. It doesn't matter if you're actually parenting a toddler or if you've parented and you're parenting a 50-year-old who calls you once a month. Just noticing as a parent, where do you get activated? And just feel that, right? If you want to, Tracy said, hold your questions till the end. But if you want to send little tidbits of feedback of these questions, like where do you feel this or what comes up, if you welcome it, I welcome it because it helps me navigate the talk even better.
Beautiful.
So feel free to use the chat. Oh, go ahead, Tracy.
Yeah, absolutely. Feel free to use the chat for feedback. And then holding maybe larger questions closer to the end where we'll get through that. But yeah, I think that would be great since, we have that chat for feedback, anything that you're feeling right now around that, right?
Yeah.
What comes up for you?
Yeah. And so just to remind you, and if you don't feel like sharing, that's completely fine as well. Mm-hmm. But just noticing the question I'm inviting is, what is the activation you have around your child? Meaning, how does my child trigger me? Do I have guilt as a parent? Do I have confusion as a parent? Overwhelm as a parent? And just, if you do, share a little line about that. If you don't want to, we'll keep going. But let me just give you a moment to feel that either way.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're going to talk about this, but I know it's, that guilt and shame. Because when we are reacting to our kids and then afterwards, that feeling, right? And getting in that cycle.
That's exactly right.
Of that, I know, because I was there as a really young single mom in that stress response, which I had no awareness of at the time, and that survival energy. That was really, really tough, really hard.
That's right. And what Tracy's saying is important because when you're thinking about times where you've been triggered or you've reacted on your child or you've felt just so overwhelmed by your child, again, at any age, what we're going to learn today is that overwhelm connects back to a time in your life where you've had trauma, particularly relational trauma. And your child awakens that in you, especially because when you're looking at your child, you're subconsciously looking at yourself as a child. So everything they're going through, everything they're saying, everything they're feeling, it hits a part of your own body. So it's important to understand that. So just to feel that for yourself again, just notice, where does that happen for me? Where do I experience that? And one thing we're learning here is somatic parenting, which means what is my body doing when I'm with my child and how am I learning my child's body and the language of my child's body. So I'm not sure about the ages of the children here, so I'm just going to give a general introduction to what that really means. So let's say you have toddlers. We'll start with toddlers, and they have tantrums. Tantrums are the really early stages of threat response. And we judge tantrums based on what triggered them, right? So let's say your son or daughter wanted a cookie and they didn't get the cookie, or it fell on the floor, or you said, oh, I'm sorry, I thought I had one and I don't, and they let loose. What they're experiencing is a loss of safety. As simple as it seems to us, the cookie for them was a sense of safety. It was something that regulated their system. So our children, especially when they're pre-verbal, like when they're a year and a half, 2 years, and they're talking a bit, but they're not forming really intricate sentences yet, and they don't have self-awareness around speaking how they're feeling. Yeah. So they can't tell us the amount of things every day that stress them out and make them feel unsafe and scare them. Things we do unconsciously, things that they see or hear, things that happen at daycare. Yeah. So it's really important to understand that they can't, because they can't do that, guess how they express it? Through their bodies. So a tantrum is the invitation of creating a safety and a bond with your child really early on, based on how you respond to it.
So how a tantrum is an invitation. Yeah, that's really, I feel that.
Oh yeah, me too.
Really powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a, it's what we call a rupture. So the child has experienced a rupture, and we tend to label the ruptures good or bad. You know, it's like, oh, grandma's leaving, that makes sense. Oh, you want dessert, that doesn't, that's not good enough. And we start at this really young age, even when they're a year old, to start with that duality in our mind of judging what's appropriate and what isn't. Yeah. But we want to try to get out of the place of good or bad behavior and just notice two things, activation and regulation. That's all we want to be looking for, not good or bad. So if your child is having a tantrum, you are seeing activation, which means there's electricity in the nervous system that is overwhelming their bodies, and they're releasing it in a very primitive way.
Yeah.
Funny enough, people come to us, Tracy and I and other somatic therapists and counselors, they come to us and they pay a lot of money to learn how to do that again. And our children are born just knowing, because it's the body. They know their bodies, right?
That's so great.
So they're not civilized yet. They're not colonized yet. So they don't have the concept of, I'll look weird if I do this.
Yeah.
I won't be loved if I do. They just, they're honest. There's no fawning there.
I love it.
It's a great opportunity to say, oh, wow, okay, they know what they're doing. Now this is the curious part. How do I support that and teach manners and structure? Because people think, well, Luis, they're just going to go crazy. They're going to be feral. And it's like that. And I'm not promoting that. But there is a way to honor what the body's doing and then create structure. And so the way we do that is we learn how to visualize again the activation or the deactivation, or what we call regulation. Regulation is when your child falls to the floor and cries. They've begun regulation. When their body goes limp, when they take a deep breath, when they're able to speak and communicate with you, when their heart rate goes back to normal, when their crying goes down to a whimper, that's when they're beginning to regulate. Everything else, the hitting, the kicking, the biting, the screaming, the throwing, the yelling, the falling on the floor and pounding, that's when they're in activation. So our first step is to see the activation, and the only thing we want to do is create a space for it to happen so we can prompt the regulation. I'm going to pause there and just let everyone hear that for a minute. Watch for the activation, make a container for it, and wait for the regulation to occur. Okay. And now there's a couple ways we can do that, the regulation. You can wait it out the first way. This is easiest at home because you're not out in public, so you're not having that shame response as a parent. So you're able to see, your child can run around the living room screaming. And if the first thing to do is just let them. Not be still face, not ignore it, actually say what you're seeing, but allow the behavior. So if your child is throwing something at you, like a little ball, they throw it and they're mad. You can say, you look really angry. And that just says to your child, I see you, I get you, you exist, and I can handle you because you're not reacting. And this is how, you know, any of us in this group who've experienced relational trauma from your parents, this is how we begin healing that intergenerational trauma and not pass it down, right?
Oh, yeah, so important. And I think... to add to that a little bit, you know, everybody, we want, everybody always says, you know, I don't want to be that parent that, you know, I know what I don't want to do, right?
That's right.
But then, you know, we don't have the tools to be regulated parents with our children. So I know I don't want to be that parent that my parent was. That's a given. Like, I think that's like real clear to mm-hmm. me. And that's a full body no. But then how, you know, how do I, because we don't have the tools.
It's good that you say that, because when I hear you say that, what I hear is our ego and our mind can identify the concept based on our own experience. Mm-hmm. It says, I don't want to be like that.
Yeah.
But the mind doesn't actually know how to not be like, the body doesn't know how to not be like that. Right. Yeah. So the mind's there, the body's not there yet. So the tools are, I'm going to talk about the tools soon.
Yeah.
So that first part is you see them, you reflect mm-hmm. verbally what you see. Without mm-hmm. any judgment, without any don't do that, just reflect what you see.
Yeah.
And you see what they do. Okay? Mm-hmm. Most children in this case who don't have severe trauma. And children by the age of 3 can have severe trauma just from birth. Mm-hmm. So your birth story is huge for that child to understand that anything traumatic happened during birth. So many parents, when I teach these classes, will say to me, but we have such a loving home. We're so regulated. I don't know why he hits his sister. And I'll say, what happened, you know, during birth or the first year of life? And they always have some kind of a medical trauma or the birth was really, really difficult, or they were stuck. Something happened that scared that body. So the child's body is stuck in a fight or flight. Yeah. And when children are 2, 3, 4, they start to be able to speak and grab and move. So all those years of pent up frustration and fear that was in there from the birth of the medical trauma actually just sits, and now it can finally be moved. It can be moved through speaking, through hitting, through fighting, through yelling. So they're actually getting this huge expression of, you know, a year or two of overwhelm out. This is especially true for kids who go to daycare really young, especially true for children who are separated at birth for a while, adopted, any of this. Yeah. So this is important to understand. This is not to infer that you're traumatizing your child by sending them to daycare. It's to say that a child's nervous system takes really until 18 to 25 years old to self-regulate. Mm. So the first couple years of life, they are so porous that anything that isn't really, that isn't essentially the mother or a guardian that's really watching and hearing them is going to activate the body. Okay, so here they are expressing themselves for the first time, which we call the terrible 2s and 3s and 4s and such, those horrible couple years until they're 5 or 6, usually, not always, where they're just losing it at the drop of a dime.
Yeah.
And that's them learning how to actually express themselves. So again, our response to that teaches them two things. You're able to express yourself, or you're not able to express yourself, or I see you, or I don't see you.
Yeah.
And everyone in this group has experience from their parents, I don't see you.
Yeah.
You speak, I don't respond. I don't feel safe with you. So this is how that begins. If your child doesn't respond to the container of watching them and responding back and saying, you're really angry, they get more and more angry. They need containment. Now, this is where the time out starts with a good idea, but doesn't work unless you do it somatically. The timeout is amazing, because what the timeout does is, if you think of activation like a simmering pot, it's not boiling yet, it's simmering. They're yelling, they're angry, they're having a tantrum, they're simmering. When you put a child in timeout, you greatly activate them. So you turn the flame up all the way, because they can't move. They're in a chair, they're in the room, and they explode usually. Now, we actually want that explosion, but we don't want it to be from abandonment. And we don't want it to be from shame. So we might be able to, the way to do that is to, and this is a little clear example, you pick up your child, or you take them by the hand if they're able to walk with you, but you do it gently. And you take them into a room, their room, ideally, or a room that's safe. You close the door and you stay in there with them. And you sit down and you just stare at them with love, and you say, I'm here when you're ready. And your child will eventually learn they can just fall apart in front of you, and then they'll crawl into your arms and they'll regulate. So you get this activation where they're exploding, and then this amazing co-regulation where you're able to hold them. Now, after your child has regulated, whether it's the first example or the second, whatever you try with them, that's when you want to talk to them. That's when you say, oh my gosh, you were mad. I get mad too when there's not dessert. Or I get mad too when my sister takes my toys. I get mad too when I go to school and I have to sit still. Like, you empathize. And then you say, let's learn other ways to express that. Mm. And that's it. And it's that simple. And it's about being really consistent. And your child will start regulating more easily around you and understand how to navigate their emotions. Okay. So I'm going to pause there and let anyone write or Tracy respond, whatever feels right there.
That's feel free to post any feedback, your thoughts on that. Would love to hear if that feels okay for you. Really, somebody said that's really powerful, being seen or not, right? Especially, again, coming from that place of being seen. Like, how powerful is that? So I think one of the issues that maybe we could go into next is, if we are that parent that typically might respond with overwhelm or anger, you know, like, why are you acting that way? You know, whatever it is. And we see this at the grocery store. We see this Toys R Us I mean, I've seen this so many times out and about. And I, you know, I just see the parent, and I've done it, respond with anger and shaming and all of that. So how do we come from that place if we're not fully regulated ourselves to be able to, you know, do these exercises and this regulation, if, and especially in the past, or if we have responded, you know, with anger, right? Yep.
So your question reminds me of something important that I'm going to preface the answer with. The first thing we want to all hear is boundary break. And as a parent, your boundaries are being broken all the time, the time, especially when your children are young. So they are, especially if you're the mother, my goodness, or if you're a single father, they're grabbing at you. They're biting you. They're constantly cutting you off. They're in your space all the time. They're loud. They wake you up in the night. So every time that happens, your body's actually experiencing a boundary break. Now, if we go backwards in time and we think of like a tribal culture, and tribal is all ethnicities. You know, every ethnicity had a tribe. This is not reserved just for certain ethnicities. Everyone. It's beyond color. Tribe just meant, right, community. And it meant circle. Everything was usually done in a circle. So if you think about a mother raising, several children in a tribe, that woman had like dozens of female relatives. She had her sisters, she had her aunties, she had her grandmother, great-grandmother, cousins, older siblings, younger siblings. There was like a huge community of women to co-regulate each other and to co-regulate the children. So that boundary break, and we see it in nature. You see a mother bear walking, and like the little baby bear jumps on her and bites her, and she just keeps walking. It's like children come at us, and it overwhelms our nervous system. But, you know, historically, we had a lot of space and time to be overwhelmed. We had a lot of support. And this is why you see in the 50s, when that tribe started to really end in the 50s culture, the housewife culture, you see hysteria entering the DSM, where psychologists were saying women are hysterical, and they were being electrocuted, for crying out loud, because of the overwhelm of the nuclear family, which is an experiment. It's like less than a century old. Wow. So the system was not evolved for that. It's evolved for co-regulation, interregulation. So I'm saying that as validation for all of us parents who lose our tempers. We see a child in Toys R Us and the parents saying, stop that. And we threaten because we're so desperate. If you do this, we're not going here. And that's when that's happening to us. We're experiencing a rupture in our boundaries, and we hit our limit, and our child triggers us. So the first step is we have to really get in touch with our physical boundaries, which is our body. Right? The body is the boundary. The actions are the ways we maintain the body, like I'm not going to see you, or I'm going to see you, or I only have an hour. That's how we like speak what the body needs. Mm-hmm. But the source of the boundary is the nervous system and the skin and the bones and the muscles.
Yeah.
So feel into your body right now and think about a time, if your child's older now, think about a time when they were younger. If they're younger now, think about a time an hour ago or a day ago, and think of a time where you snapped at them. A time where you yelled, a time where you hit them or almost hit them, a time where you threatened them, anything where you had a huge tantrum yourself in response to your child.
Yeah.
And just see where you feel that. Where's the overwhelm in your body?
Mm.
And if you'd like to, Tracy, I'd love to ask you, you don't tell us the situation, but do you want to share where your body's feeling?
Yeah, so I feel that in my chest. Yeah.
And what does it feel like for you?
It's heavy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. So this is important. So when Tracy feels it in her chest and wherever all of you feel it, what we want to learn about trauma and about charge and about the nervous system is it's a circuit and it's ideal for the energy just to move through and be dissipated.
Yeah.
Whether it's a yell, a run, a breath, a cry, a laugh, so many ways to dissipate it. When we feel the heaviness, like right now I feel it in my solar plexus, if I think of my example.
Mm-hmm.
Yours is in your chest. Some of us will feel it in our jaw. Some of us will feel numb, which means we're so overwhelmed we can't feel. Doesn't mean you're not feeling anything. It means there's so much, but you can't feel it.
Yeah.
That's stuck energy. That's when the charge gets constricted around by the body and the organs and the muscles, and it can't move.
Mm-hmm.
And when the charge gets constricted like that and it can't move, that's when we're going to have a trigger with our children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of us are navigating our lives from that charge.
Mm-hmm.
When I was talking about the tribe, we go to work. We have duties at home, like to clean our house in particular ways. We have school engagements, especially now. Most people's children are home being virtually schooled. Mm-hmm. There are so many. The space that we once had is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Between you and your children.
Yeah.
So when you've worked all day and you've gotten up and you made food for everybody and you ran to work and you run home and make food for everybody and you put everyone to bed, where are you?
Mm.
Right? Like we become disassociated.
Yeah.
So the body has this charge that Tracy and I are talking about feeling right now, and it constricts it because we don't even know it's there.
Yeah.
So our first step is when we start to feel like someone wrote yes, but what to do earlier when Tracy was saying the tools, we don't have the tools to start having the tools. It's interesting, actually, we have the tools, we don't know it. So when we feel that charge, first step is to identify it. And I tell everybody the best way to do this is to set a timer, because it can be very intimidating to try to do this just with an open container. We want to create a container. And when you're not in therapy or you're not talking to a counselor or a coach and you're at home and you're making dinner and suddenly you feel the panic come up, we want to set the alarm even for 30 seconds. We want something outside of us that's going to tell us when it's over. And that's going to help the body feel a bit more open and safe to go into this. So I tell everybody, if they can, 5 minutes. 2 minutes is amazing as well, and 30 seconds if that's all you have.
Yeah.
Go into a room where you close the door. And if your child is present and they're wanting you, and that's part of the overwhelm, don't make it about them. Say, I have to go to the bathroom. Say, I have to check something, I'll be right back. Even if they're crying, that's okay. We just want to make sure they don't think it's about them. So we just want to say, I'm going to go to the bathroom, I'll be out in 2 minutes. Give them a book, give them whatever it takes to give them, 2 minutes away from you. Close the door, set the alarm, and just put your hand, and we'll all do this together right now, put your hand over the place where you feel it right now, wherever you feel your charge. And just give it a slight pressure, just ever so gently, almost as if you're holding yourself.
Yeah.
And breathe into it. And just notice as you do this, and we're all going to have a different experience, as you do this, the charge is either going to grow and get bigger, it's going to do nothing or get numb, or it's going to start relaxing and dissipating. For those of you who are relaxing with it, enjoy, breathe into that. For those of you who feel the charge rising, we want to engage movement. The simplest movement for all parents who are dealing with this boundary break is this. We're all going to do it together. Put your hands out against your chest like this. So you, yes, they're touching your chest. And very slowly, you just start extending them away from you as if you're pressing something away from you. Yeah, nice. And take breaths while you do it. And just notice as your hands get further away, does this feel good? Do I want to go further? And you just go as far as your hands want to. Mine love going all the way. So I press mine way out until they're completely straight. And take your time getting there. And then we just take a breath and we almost like we're swimming. Just move your arms, one nice move, and just drop them to your side. Tracy's yawning, which is good.
Yeah,
that means that's the beginning of parasympathetic release when you yawn. If you burp, that's another one. Any kind of release means you're actually starting to calm down the nervous system.
Yeah.
So let's all feel our bodies for a minute. Notice, how does that feel? Did the charge lessen? Did it build? Yeah. What happened for me? And do you want to share what happened for you, Tracy?
Yeah, so I immediately, you know, just my shoulders dropped down and you know, breathing more fully. And it's almost like that my chest opened up, right? Just pushing that out of away. And
that's
chest
right.
Chest opened up, my shoulders dropped.
That's right. And notice what she said, chest opened. So remember earlier I said when we have that pressure, it's because the body's constricting.
Yeah.
When we have a threat response, we're bracing against a charge. That's just what the body does. And when we're traumatized and have traumatized nervous systems, we really brace around the charge because the charge feels like a threat. Even happiness feels like a charge, can feel like a threat. Okay. Yeah. So when Tracy said it opened, that's the key of the unlocking trauma, is the body opens and the charge, the same charge that traumatized you, actually starts nourishing you and becomes your vitality. It's amazing. And you can feel it, right?
Yeah, you can feel it.
So if this is part of you, this, if this becomes your ritual, this becomes your normal life. Imagine where you can be so aware you're at home cooking and you notice, oh, my shoulders are up like this while I'm cooking.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember what they said in that class. I'm going to set the alarm for 30 seconds. I'm going to let my shoulders come down. I'm going to move my arms. I'm going to feel, even just doing that for me, I feel release. Mm-hmm. I'm going to feel it, and then I'm going to walk back and cook. All we're doing is taking the lid off the boiling pot throughout the day.
Yeah.
So we have the capacity to respond to our children's tantrums. Otherwise, their tantrums trigger our tantrums.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a child of a narcissistic parent, you have a lot of tantrum in you from not being heard.
Oh,
and your child's going to bear that. You know? So someone said, can you say that again? So I'm going to repeat myself. So when you are taking the lid off your stress, let's call it.
Mm-hmm.
So that buildup, you realize I'm built up somewhere. I'm going to set the alarm for 30 seconds or so and do what they did in the class. Move my arms, feel it kind of dissipate, then go back and cook. Just by doing that every day, several times a day if you need to, you're doing what we call building the capacity. I see the rest of that. And when we build the capacity, what's happening is that same charge that was stuck in creating stress and trauma creates vitality. Because this is what gets very wild and kind of like far out about trauma healing.
Yeah.
Trauma is really just life force. It's just the propellant to get you away from a threat.
Yeah.
But we become traumatized when the propellant doesn't stop propelling us. We get stuck.
Yeah.
So it hits us inside. It's like, if think of an explosion, it implodes. If it explodes out, we regulate and that charge dissipates and becomes vitality.
Yeah.
But when it's concentrated, it's a threatening charge. So that's the non-duality of life, really, in like a capsule right there.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Right? It's amazing.
Wow.
So if we're doing this work, our nervous system has that capacity, and we won't get as easily triggered by our children. So I'm going to pause and let everyone catch up to that. And Tracy, if you want to prompt or ask anything.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you feel like sharing any feedback with that, it's really powerful. You know, just really feeling that, you know, if that feels like something that you can hold, and sharing anything about that experience if you feel called to do that. Yeah, that nourishment. So good, right? Yeah. So maybe what we could do is talk a little bit about those parents that, for example, my mother was more of the covert narcissist that didn't use a lot of words, but her facial expressions was enough to scare the living daylights out of a child. And her tone and the glare and the body posture. It's something that even when I talk about it now, I remember exactly how I felt. Mm-hmm. And she would sit in this chair with her newspaper or her book for hours and not say a word, right? So, and that's the way she was throughout my childhood when she was around, and she also wasn't around a lot. But just that nonverbal, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't get the yelling and the screaming, or, I got this nonverbal, but that I clearly remember and still I can feel when I talk about it, right? So do you have anything to add to that? Because I know there's a lot of people in the group with kind of that experience as well, where you really are not seen or heard.
Mm-hmm. And describing is essentially your experience wasn't being reflected back to you.
Yeah.
And when you're a child and your experience isn't reflected back to you, you tend to dissociate because you feel all this. You look to the parent for reflection, which we call co-regulation. Yeah. The parent is either still-faced, or they have an angry face, or they're ignoring you, or they're yelling at you, either way, but they're not reflecting back to you. So this is important. So this is the really early beginnings of what we call co-regulation, which just means someone's nervous system helps my nervous system feel safe. And when we're children, we have no capacity to self-regulate. We self-soothe. We self-soothe by sucking our thumb, by scratching at ourselves, by eating, but we don't self-regulate. There's a big difference. Just like us as adults, when we overeat or we smoke pot or we drink alcohol, we're not self-regulating, we're self-soothing.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you don't have that kind of attention, you don't have that kind of response back to yourself, you don't have a parent that's co-regulating with you. Yeah. So the nervous system gets so overwhelmed, it has to dissociate. Yeah. Okay. There's sirens going by. So sorry if that's loud.
Okay.
You have to dissociate because it's so overwhelming and it has nowhere to go. So when you talk about the covert narcissist, again, when we say this term narcissist, and I actually have a podcast in a week coming out with a specialist who specializes in narcissism, and it's really amazing because it explains everything we're talking about of how this person came to be and all the ways narcissism shows itself.
Yeah.
It's not about arrogance. We think it's about arrogance. It's so beyond that. It's someone that can't feel pain. Are very uncomfortable and don't have the capacity to feel pain. So when you would look at your mother and she would give you a glance, like there'd be no abusive word, there would just be the glance. Just the glance would send a signal back to the nervous system that says, you're unlovable, I don't care about you, I don't see you, what's wrong with you? And then we form our identity through the way someone is treating us. That's just what we do as children. So that's in your nervous system. So again, when your child is looking at you and crying, part of you healing your own wounds as a child is by reflecting back their experience to them versus reacting on them.
Yeah.
So I'll pause there.
Reflecting back their experience, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
And I can keep going into something else, but I just want to pause and let everyone feel that and see if any question comes in.
Feel that. I guess we could. Do you want to start taking questions?
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Is now a good time? Yeah, I think this is a good time to start asking. Yeah, let's go ahead and take questions, you guys. If anyone, and just type it into the chat. Someone is saying, so you want to look at them with empathy.
So, well, we want to look at them. I mean, that's a beautiful way to put it. Empathy is beautiful. Empathy is more like I'm feeling the situation. So I'm looking, if my daughter's crying, let's say, and I look at her crying and I can feel that pain, or I imagine what she's going through, I'm empathizing with her. My reaction wants to just express that. So you don't want to join them, right? Like, we don't want to actually, because they've lost control, just like we have when we're triggered. So if they're, let's say they're crying over their brother takes away their toy, like rips out of their hands, and they have a breakdown. We don't want to like have the breakdown with them, or agree with the breakdown, or like enable it, like make it bigger. But yeah, we want to think, wow, that's really scary, and look at them and say, oh, sweetheart, you must be so scared right now, or you must be so upset right now, or what can I do for you right now? Just so they know you hear them and you see them and you understand them. So if that means looking at them with empathy, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Someone says, how can you teach a child to redirect and put their energy somewhere else?
Love that. So that's something that this is really cool, actually, because there's a couple ways. It depends on the age. So I would say between two and three, depending on the development of the child, you can start doing that. Before two, it's going to be very difficult. You have to be the one to transmute that. And so it starts with the parent. It's learned behavior. If they see you putting your energy into something else, they're going to start learning how to do that themselves. They're going to feel it in the field. They're going to notice how it feels for activation and dissipation. So if you lock yourself out of the house, if you go, oh my God, oh, I always do this. Like, you're teaching them to go into it, right? Unconsciously and innocently, you're teaching that. Yeah. But if you can't get into the house, you go, oh, you know, it's a beautiful day. Let's hang outside for a couple minutes while I think about it. You just redirected your energy, and they're feeling and learning that. Now, when they're older, the best way to redirect a child's energy is play. Play is the way. So yeah, this especially works with scenarios. This especially works with daycare or play dates. Because when your child is with other children and other caretakers and not with you, they're going to experience stress even if nothing bad happened, because they're not with their typical co-regulators. Yeah. So when they get home, the best thing to do is to say, you know, to get this, to make this kind of part of the culture of raising your child, you want to do a lot of role playing. And it works best to do it with dolls or action figures or stuffed animals. Because if there's something you're looking at that isn't one of you, the child is going to unconsciously project what happened to them onto the things. So you get to say things like, oh, I'll pretend to be your teacher today and you be you, or I'll be you and you be the teacher. And you'll just hear these amazing things like, Marcus, stop moving, you move too much. And then you can notice, oh, my son has some stress around being told to stay still. Now, the teacher's not being abusive, but it's stressing out his body. Yeah. So you can say, oh, Marcus, how does that feel when the teacher tells you that? And you get to learn what they're going through. And this is a more intellectual way of expressing the energy, not really redirecting it. Yeah. But the redirecting as well, it comes through play. So if your son or your daughter's very angry and they're having a tantrum, they're crying, let them have it. The distraction thing, I don't agree with 100%, because you want them to feel their emotions.
Yeah.
But then after they felt it, they're not coming down naturally. That's when you redirect with play. That's when you say, oh, let's blow some bubbles. That's when you say, oh, let's play hide and seek. That's when you say, oh, but look over here. There's this amazing, look at this goofy thing I'm doing. And it makes them laugh and it starts to regulate them.
Yeah.
So every time there's an activation, we want to respond with a regulation. Hope that answers your question. Yeah.
And somebody was asking, how do you build the practice of noticing how you are feeling and then taking that time to regulate, right? That really is.
Oh, that's the work. That's really the work. Right?
That's what I tell all my clients. That's the work.
Yeah, that's the work. And oh my goodness, it's definitely to quote Byron Katie, it's not the work for nothing. It's a lot of work. Yeah. So, but then it's really easy once you do it a lot. Yeah. But so this is where you'd want to, you know, work with Tracy or take a class from her, sign up for one of my courses, or I do a healing circle once a month where people can sliding scale and they can come in. This is all on my website. I'll talk about that at the end. But you want to work with someone who is a somatic practitioner who can teach you how to learn how to speak to your body. Because all we're doing, right, is learning how to speak the language of our body. Yeah. So you become so embodied, which means if I'm on the phone with a client now and I'm talking, I'll notice when my shoulder starts to go up a little bit.
Yeah.
And for me, I've learned that that's my threat response. My shoulders come up. Now, I used to live like that for hours, have migraines, and my arm would be numb. And I was like, why am I sick all the time? And no one knew why. And then when I started practicing somatic work, I became embodied, like we all will doing this work. And you just notice when you're going into threat response, it just becomes so natural to notice. And then you know how to redirect. Yeah. And it's a constant, it's not a fixed state of enlightenment. You're constantly noticing and redirecting.
Yeah.
That's my experience anyway. What about you, Tracy?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't even know how I survived all of those years in that state.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I can kind of laugh now, but I had a frozen shoulder that is like it was like the most painful thing I've ever experienced for 6 months, and I couldn't move it. It was literally frozen. Mm. And now I understand it makes perfect sense because that was my body just tense and, you know, doing whatever I could to try to get rid of it, which was, you know, sometimes socially acceptable things like exercising too much and sometimes unacceptable things, right?
That's such a good way to put it. You know, the frozen shoulder, I love the frozen shoulder. I've come to love it because it's like I've learned that all these syndromes and all these illnesses that we have.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So this is how I got into the trauma healing work. Because I started as a nutritionist and people were coming in with all these symptoms. I started realizing each person has a root. Their symptom agrees with their trauma. It's related.
Yeah.
So when there's a frozen shoulder, especially if it's the left shoulder, there is like so much unprocessed grief. The heart is right there. So it's like you are literally guarding your heart unconsciously. Yeah. And it's amazing what our bodies do and how it feels when you let go of that, right?
So all of that pain and chronic fatigue, gone.
Absolutely. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah, really, 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 really incredible. Okay, somebody's asking, they work with kids with autism that use, what happened to that? They use behavior to communicate.
Beautifully put. Somatic work is the work you would do with kids with autism. I mean, and you're probably, this person writing this is probably really familiar with things like sensory rooms. And that's what this is all about. Weighted blankets. There's these machines even that they'll put a child in who's having an autistic child who's having like aggression. And the machine gently tightens around them and helps regulate their nervous system. So the work of any therapist or teacher or caregiver or nurse that specializes with autism, you're already a step ahead because you're learning about it's all with autism, especially it's all about a hypersensitive nervous system. So an autistic person, someone with fragile X, all these kinds of varieties of all and variations, this person's experiencing threat really easily. It could be the light coming in the window. It could be a car horn beeping, and it can send them into like mania. So when you learn about the sensory rooms, what you're really learning is how different tactile environments and objects and engagements help discharge that threat response. So the work with autism is like light years ahead of psychotherapy in that way, which I love. Wow. So you're completely right. You're completely right. Whoever said that.
Yeah, that's not a constant state of enlightenment.
I feel like we have such a pressure to like make it. Such an American concept that we just like make it and we're there, and it invites so much shame. So yeah. It's like, you're never there. You're always there and you're always not. And we're just like in between all the time. And the only thing we can do about it is notice. That's all we can do about it. And then we have a natural response when we notice.
Yeah. Somebody said something the other day, was a meme or something. He said, before you can get enlightened, you got to get grounded.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, that makes so much sense. Yeah, because we're always reaching for this,
yes.
this place.
Yes, yes. And then we have ourselves leaving our bodies and trying to ignore our thinking to be enlightened. Yeah. But you have to go into the muck to be enlightened. You can't leave the muck. You're just abandoning yourself then.
Absolutely. Yes, I've done plenty of that. Love it, love it, love it. Yeah. Somebody said self-soothe with showers.
Mm.
Yeah.
A shower is a great way. A great way to, you know, so if I may, I speak about soothing versus regulating?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Because that comment really reminded me of the importance of that. Mm-hmm. So soothing is a beautiful thing. The only difference between soothing and regulating is if you're not consciously working with the activation at the same time. So if you're taking a shower and you're not yet embodied to your activation and you're just enjoying the shower, that's beautiful. Like, do that. Take a bath, what, massage, whatever it is. But you're soothing, which just means you're calming down a part of your body. You're only feeling the parts that are calm. You're not feeling the parts that are activated. What we do in somatic therapy, so especially somatic experiencing, which is so remarkable and very, very avant-garde actually, is we're also inviting the activated parts.
Yeah.
So when you're in that shower, as you're feeling how good the shower feels, you also want to notice, where am I still clenching? Where am I still bracing?
Yeah.
Where is there pressure? Where is the fear? And when you're in a shower, your skin is usually really happy. So it's your viscera, it's your lungs. You want to check your breath. It's your stomach, it's your organs, your eyeballs, your jaw, your bones. And then when you let that safety that the shower's creating kind of like permeate and integrate with those braced parts and they start relaxing, that's when we begin regulating. Does that make sense?
Love it. Somebody's asking, what about when memory triggers? So I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm imagining they're asking that because we're talking so much about your child, like physically triggering you.
Okay.
I find memory to be the number one cause of PTSD and anxiety and depression. Number one cause, which sounds intense at first because you can think of a lot of really horrible situations people go through.
Yeah.
But the difference about memory in a situation is a situation ends and a memory permeates. So if we consider PTSD, it's a state of being consistently threatened by a past memory or a future projection. And so here you are, right? You're right here. Here's your past, here's your future, and they're both threatening. So there you are, stuck in between threat, and your body freezes, and that's when we become traumatized. So what's so remarkable about this is people have found, whether it's the war or whether it's like September 11th or any kind of major cultural or communal traumatic event, where some people leave no trauma, other people leave a ton of trauma. And it comes down to their development, how well they develop their nervous systems. It comes down to how quickly they co-regulated with somebody else after the event. And it comes down to if their mind is triggered. And so memory triggering you is the same as a person triggering you to the body. It's the same thing. Okay. And perceived threat is the same thing as actual threat.
Yeah.
So imagining something really scary makes the body feel like it's actually happening.
And this is...
happening now, and it's so important because people think they're not allowed to feel trauma unless they've experienced something cataclysmic. But you could be 4 years old and experience vicarious trauma just by I saw the movie Jaws when I was like six by accident. I walked down the hallway, my dad was watching, and I saw this horrible scene, and I developed insomnia. I was clinically traumatized just from seeing that, like a 1 minute of a violent film. And it's called vicarious trauma. Your body picks up on what someone else goes through, even in a movie. So it can take something that simple to build an overwhelm in the nervous system because your body feels threatened and we don't know how to discharge it. So memory, absolutely, same thing. And the way we work with this, it gets pretty intricate. There's a lot of resources to learn the depths of this. The way I showed us today is one way. There's like dozens.
So good. So good. Good stuff. Any other questions, you guys?
These are great questions.
Yeah, really great questions. Feel free to put that in the chat. And while we're waiting to see if there's any other questions, do you want to go ahead and give everyone your information, what's coming up, and I'll post that, you know, in the group as well. I mean, this is, you know, we're doing really complimentary work, and so yeah, this could be helpful for a lot of people. So why don't you go ahead and share where people can find you, what's coming up, what things you have, and then I'll post it as well.
Great, thank you. So my name of my private practice is called Holistic Life Navigation. If you go to the website, everything's there. And by everything, I mean there's a podcast. So every week I come out with a different episode. And some of them are exercises that teach you how to do this work just from listening. Others are interviews. Some are personal stories of mine. All different ways of healing trauma in a very unusual fashion, alternative fashion. So the podcast is a weekly resource. Twice a year, I teach a four-week course. And it's like a deep dive into learning how to heal trauma through somatic work. It involves diet, it involves physical exercises, it involves journaling. We have a Facebook community group as well that meets throughout it so you can share with each other. And we meet twice a week, and that's a four-week course. The course is currently at capacity for the fall. The next one's in spring, and all the info is on my website for that as well. Every month I do the healing circle. It's a sliding scale, and it's $10 to $30 per person. It's 90 minutes. And we meet on Zoom, and it's very much like this, except for you can see your face if you want to be seen. Otherwise, you can stay completely hidden. It's never recorded. It's a safe space where people can actually share where they're at. And by sharing, I answer, and we do practices together. So we're all together informing the way the circle goes every month and learning this work, you know, with one another. Those are the best ways that I can offer my services to everybody right now.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah. And then all your social media is on your website as well.
Yep, everything's there. Instagram and Facebook, Holistic Life Navigation, same thing.
Okay. Somebody's saying, let me just pop that up here. They joined late. Where's the best place to start with our kids if we have not been doing a terrific job with this?
Yep. The best place to start is exactly where you are. And I know that that's so cheesy, like everyone says that, but you cannot, let me think of a way to put this. Any amount of guilt and grief and shame that you're carrying because you haven't done this yet is going to get in the way of doing it. It is not your fault. You are innocent. So you're just learning this now. Yeah, it's very important. So you start where you're at. And what's really what I love about this work, and I think what I mean by this work is really the body. What I love about the body is it's built for resilience. It's built for repair, right? Yeah. So in somatic therapy, we call it rupture and repair. So if you've had a ruptured experience with your children where it's just more rupture than repair, that's okay as long as you start inviting the repair.
Yeah.
So what we're learning here is a little like we're skimming the surface on ways we invite the repair.
Yeah.
So if we begin that is the best gift you can give them at any age. Even if they're 40 and they're mad at you, you can start hearing them now at 40 and it will change how they feel about you eventually.
So that's a really good point. If we could just take a few minutes, let's talk about that for a second because unfortunately, some of us do have adult children that we have strained relationships with because we didn't know about this work. And we do have strained relationships with our adult children, and that's a really awful feeling when we think, wow, we have this strained relationship with our parent, and now we've passed down that with our children too. So that a lot of people in the group also maybe even have, you know, a child that doesn't want anything to do with them, right? So
that's right.
And it's scary to go and be vulnerable. And so
yes, it is.
Can you take a few minutes on that?
Yeah. You know what, yeah. What I love about that, and I've worked with a lot of parents in that situation who are estranged, who their children are no contact with them. It's a rough place to be, because you feel so much shame and guilt, because like, oh no, I did the thing I didn't want to do. If you hate your own parents, then you hate yourself. It's so deep. And this is why in the beginning I invited very briefly that understanding of how we got here.
Yeah.
Which again was, you know, our relations, our attachment security wasn't there.
Yeah.
So the person to attach to, which just essentially means the person that I spend the most time with, who I want to feel safe with, I don't feel safe with.
Yeah.
So it's a trauma. And you were given that trauma from a parent who didn't have that trauma process in themselves. So this is what I love about the idea of no contact is it sounds harsh to some people, but you can forgive and love your parents and have complete no contact still, because you know your body can't handle being with them, and you know they can't be there for you. So you just know this isn't the relationship I need. It's not helpful.
Yeah.
But if you've done this yourself to your own children, you can understand them. And by understanding them, you start forgiving yourself and them. So you can give to your parents what you wish they would give to you.
Yeah.
So one of the exercises I love to invite people to do is indulge in what your needs are from your parents at the age you're at right now. So if you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, just imagine if my parents were alive, or if they were open to this, what would I want them to say? What would I want them to write me?
Yeah.
And write it down. And that's what you need to write to your kids. So send them an email, you know, text them, write them a letter, call them if you're on speaking terms, and say, I'm so sorry, I didn't know how to do this. I'm learning now.
Yeah.
You can tell me when you're ready how you felt growing up, and I'll show you I can handle it. And they'll either do it and you'll repair, or they won't trust you, but at least you are opening yourself to them and you're healing your own body by doing that.
Yeah.
That's the best advice I can give with that.
So perfect. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really beautiful when we can allow ourselves to be open to that and be vulnerable in that way, because I know most of us, if we have a parent, we have, it's not like it's not like we never tried. We tried our entire lives, right? And we got to this, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of going no contact. Because we got to a point where it was just too much, right? And that's a lot of people are like, I can't do it anymore, because we never got acknowledgement. We never got that letter, and we probably won't, right? And then doing that work, for me personally, I don't have a trigger, you know, with my mom anymore. I could see her if I wanted to, but there's no relationship or, you know, she's very surface level. That's all she can do. That's all the capacity that she has. She can talk about the weather and the cats. But if I ask her anything deeper than that, she's not going to be available. She's going to, you know, she's going to do her thing, right?
Yeah.
And I don't expect anything different.
That's so beautiful.
Right.
That I love that, because the two things you said, so many things there that were important. You said capacity, and one thing we're learning here is like building our capacity so we can be there for our kids. Your mom isn't open to building that capacity. So when you have, if your parent hasn't built it, then you're at the level you're at, which is like, or say the place you're at, which is I can't expect this thing. And then you get into the reality of, if they weren't my mother or father, would I have them in my life? It's this story that we have to be with our parents because they're our parents. But if they were just a person, would you invite them into your life?
Yeah.
If the answer is no, then allow yourself to, you know, listen to that no.
Absolutely.
And then work on your own relationship to your children and your own body. And then you can heal.
Yeah. And that's what I always tell people. And then if you feel like, you know, making contact, that's fine. But typically what happens is like that there's no you know, when we become in this embodied state, right, we want those deeper connections and relationships. Mm-hmm. It becomes really important because, mm-hmm. you know, and that surface level mind stuff kind of isn't, at least for me, you know, it's just not, I want that deeper level. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of this, right? So those that's people right. that are, like my mom, it's just surface level because she hasn't done, and she doesn't have the capacity or the awareness. That really isn't going to be somebody that I'm going to interact with on a regular basis, right?
Yeah, and the words you're using about like deeper, it's like think of the word capacity we were using. Mm-hmm. The deeper your own capacity is, the deeper you're going to want to and be able to relate to other people. Yeah. And it feels so good to go really intimate
so
and deep.
So good, yeah.
And so you want more of that. So it's not that you judge people who can't, but you just don't, it doesn't serve you and you don't serve them. Right. You make them as uncomfortable as they make you. So it's like, why are we doing this to each other?
Exactly. And it's super uncomfortable for people, right?
It doesn't work, right? Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
And that's okay. Yeah, I love it. I love that. All right, let's see. All right. How can you get your nervous system to still be present and vulnerable and not dissociate if you have a tendency to do so? Yeah, when stressed. So,
that's the that's essentially why somatic therapy was invented for your question. Okay. Because coaching that isn't somatic, therapy that isn't somatic, counseling that isn't somatic, if the somatic piece isn't there, and the somatic piece just means the body, right? Yeah. So if we're not talking about the body, but we're talking about the mind and identity, what's happening is talking is actually a way to dissociate.
Yeah.
So it's like we talk to not feel what's happening in our bodies.
Yeah.
So this work teaches you how to actually feel that charge and create safety with the charge itself. If you have safety with the charge itself, your body won't dissociate.
Yeah.
Dissociation is a mechanism to deal with overwhelm. Yeah. So by doing this work, you learn how to spread the charge and dissipate it so you don't get overwhelmed and then you don't dissociate. But at first, you are going to dissociate, and that's why you need a practitioner. And then, you know, after maybe a couple sessions for some people, other people, it's like, you know, dozens of sessions, it depends on your body. Yeah. You won't need the person anymore. You'll feel secure in your body.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Love
and
that.
It's really about spreading the charge versus constricting the charge. When it constricts, so everyone think of your body having all these like wires and hoses, like a garden hose. And when you kink the hose and that pressure builds, that's what happens when we're experiencing the trauma response. It constricts and the pressure builds. Yeah. If the pressure is building around your chest, what happens is your focus is just on your chest and you lose your arms and your head and your belly and your legs. And when you lose those things, it becomes so overwhelming because a little part of you, like 10% of you is online or feeling that charge. And that's when we dissociate. So when we learn how to spread that, oh, I have arms, I can put it there. That's why the earlier exercise felt really good because we spread the charge. Yeah. We don't dissociate because we're staying neutral.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Any other questions? I think we got them all. Any other questions before we wrap up? Drop that in the comments. Wow, this has just been so, so good, right? Even if you don't have children,
You have an inner child. You still have an inner child to parent.
Exactly. So I think, you know, this, the great thing again about this work and what we talked about today is, you know, even if you don't have kids, or you don't have them yet, you know, this can apply, right?
That's right.
To anyone, and that inner child that didn't get that, you know, nurturing and soothing, really. And I always like to say that we, you know, we're going back and soothing ourselves. And the body wants this. I always tell clients, you know, the body wants this. It responds pretty, you know, pretty well. Would you say that that's your experience?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The body is built to regulate.
Yeah.
And that's why we get addicted. That's why we cope, because we're looking for something to temporarily regulate our system. And that's all addiction and coping is. It temporarily regulates the body. And then once you metabolize the substance, or the person leaves you, or the job ends, or the money stops coming, then the charge comes right back. But the body is built to regulate. So if it can't regulate itself, it turns toward addiction to regulate itself.
Yeah.
And it's innocent. It's just like you said, it's so wanting that. So you're spot on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I actually just had, I had a thought. I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead with your thought. Please do.
It's about a resource. I forgot. I had in August, I had done a much more intensive around parenting somatically. It's a webinar. And I have the replay available. So if anyone wants to buy that, it's $25. You can just email me through the website and I'll send you the link. I just thought of that now.
Yeah, perfect. Beautiful. I'm sure that will be really helpful. And if you want to send me that link, I'll be happy to post that in the group as well.
Sure.
For anybody, that'd be great. And okay, so it doesn't look like there's any more questions. So I think we will... I think we'll wrap it up, although we could probably keep going with this.
We'll have more. Maybe we'll meet again.
We'll do it again. Yeah, there's just so much. But I think we'll wrap it up for today, because I appreciate everybody's time and being here with us and hearing this information maybe for the first time. So I want to thank you, Luis, for joining me, and I just really, really so appreciate this connection in doing this. I really just honor everything about this and you and your work. And thanks everyone for joining us. So we're going to wrap it up. We're going to end. If I'm going to put this replay around, if anybody has any comments or questions, please get in touch with Luis directly. And again, I'll post his information as well. This replay will be up for those people that could not join live. Anything else that I'm missing? Anything else you want to add?
I just want to share my gratitude to you and to everyone who came. And it's very brave work to do as a parent, to yourself or to your children. Yeah. So I respect that, and I respect you. And thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much. All right, you guys, we are going to sign out. And thanks again so much for joining. We'll see you again for sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.